Welcome to Vegas Dave's Dive.
Hello everybody, Vegas Dave Consolazio here. Thank you for joining me here on Vegas Dave's Dime. And I have to start today by talking about one of the greatest and yet one of the most predictable rivalries in sports. And that is Roger Federer versus Rafael Nadal. Nadal won his fourth straight French Open today, which shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. He's undefeated in French Open play. And this, of course, is due to the fact that the French Open is played on clay. Rafael Nadal once won 81 consecutive matches on clay. He won 101 of 102 matches on clay during that stretch. He is widely renowned as one of, and probably the greatest, clay player of all time. And he defeated Roger Federer, which, again, is no surprise. He's 9-1 against Federer on the clay. The one loss that he had to Federer on the clay happened to be the loss that broke his 81 consecutive streak. Off the clay, Federer is 5-2. In the seven times they've met off the clay. 3-2 on hard courts, 2-0 on grass. And one of the reasons they so rarely meet on hard court or grass is because of the fact that since they're 1-2, their brackets are always placed opposite of each other. So the only way they can meet is to both make it to the finals, which is pretty much a foregone conclusion in the French Open. But in other major tournaments, Rafael Nadal is still one of the great players in the game, but his dominance isn't present like it is on clay, and he is beatable. And it's just amazing to actually take a look at what Roger Federer has accomplished in his career, and to note what a huge Achilles heel Rafael Nadal has been for him. Only two men in the history of tennis have ever accomplished tennis's most prestigious feat, and that's the calendar year Grand Slam, winning the Australian Open, the French Open, the US Open, and the Wimbledon, all in the same calendar year. Don Budge did it in 1938, and Rod Laver did it in 1962 and 1969. Only two people ever have done that. Including those two, only five players have ever accomplished a career Grand Slam, winning all four of those major titles at some point in their career. The other three were Fred Perry, Roy Emerson, and Andre Agassi. And you take a look at what Federer has done. It's called a small slam when you win three of the four. He's accomplished the small slam three different times in the same calendar year. In 2004, he won the Australian, the US, and the Wimbledon. In 2006, he won the Australian, the US, and the Wimbledon. And in 2007, he won the Australian, the US, and the Wimbledon. In 2004, Gustavo Kuerten beat him before he could make the finals on the clay in the French Open. But in both 2006 and 2007, Roger Federer made the finals in the French Open only to be defeated by Rafael Nadal. Both times, in 2006 and 2007, not only did Nadal prevent Federer from becoming only the sixth man to ever win a career Grand Slam, he also prevented both times Roger Federer from becoming only the third to ever win a calendar year Grand Slam. And he would have been the first since 1969. It's just remarkable how good Rafael Nadal is on clay and how terribly unlucky Roger Federer is that Nadal was placed in this era. And I know it's a ridiculous thing to say, but if Rafael Nadal had come around 10 years sooner or 10 years later, Roger Federer has probably won a calendar year Grand Slam twice. Absolutely once. Because Roger Federer, on his game, is as dominant in a single sport as any other player in any other sport. The only comparison I can draw is Tiger Woods. But the difference between Roger Federer and Tiger Woods is Federer's Achilles heel. There's not a course that Tiger Woods cannot beat Phil Mickelson on, for example. Roger Federer has Rafael Nadal as a permanent block from this career Grand Slam. Because Nadal's not going anywhere anytime soon. He's only 22 years old. So if Roger Federer is going to join that elite group, he's going to have to get through Rafael Nadal. And I'm not sure that that's possible. And it'll really be something to see how that affects Roger Federer's ranking among the greatest of all time in 20 years from now, 50 years from now. Can you look at his accomplishments and say he was the greatest of all time if he isn't in the Grand Slam Club? Can you give him a pass for being 1-9 on clay against Rafael Nadal? I don't know that you can or can't. I personally do. Watching Roger Federer play tennis, like watching Tiger Woods play golf, is a spectacle of how the sport is played just about perfectly. But I don't know how the history books will treat him. Because if he is truly the greatest of all time, one player, regardless of court, shouldn't be able to dominate him so bad. That's what I think the history books might say, fairly or unfairly. And it'll be really interesting to see down the line how well-respected Roger Federer is. He'll absolutely go down as one of the greats of all time. But can he crack a top 3 list or a top 5 list in most people's books without that Grand Slam? The other thing I wanted to comment on quickly, I haven't had the chance to this week because it's been a busy week with the Belmont Stakes and whatnot, is how stupid the baseball draft is. First of all, why is it in the middle of the season? In all other sports, you play the season, you have the championship game, and then there's that waiting period until the season starts. And you keep going on your team's page and loading and reloading the page to see if there were any trades made. But the biggest day for you during the off season is the draft. That's what all the speculation leads up to. Who are we going to take? Are we going to trade our pick? It's so exciting for the major sports fan to try and figure out what a team is going to do with their pick. That's why every other sport has the draft during the off season. Not just as an afterthought in the middle of the season. Secondly, why are there 50 rounds with over 1,500 players taken? I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't even know how the baseball draft works. And I know a lot about every sport out there. And I have read pages on the baseball draft, and I still can't figure out what all these Rule 5 and compensation picks and all this nonsense is. I can't figure it out. And I can't figure out how you can have a scout team so good that they can have a list of 1,500 high school and college players so that come the 47th round, you can make a good pick. You could say, oh good, I was hoping this kid would slide to us here. With the 1,213th pick, the Dodgers select such and such. Is it all just a crapshoot at that point? And then a lot of these kids, if they don't like where they got drafted, get to re-enter the draft. So what's the point of having the draft? I just don't get it. And lastly, There aren't even international players in the draft. All the great players in the Dominican Republic, all the great players that have been coming over from Japan, and all the great players from all around the world, other than the United States, are irrelevant in Major League Baseball's draft. How? Why? Shouldn't there be some way to compensate for this? Is it fair that the best players from around the world can only go to big market teams? If there is a pitcher in the Dominican Republic that looks like the next Johan Santana, you can't use your first pick on him? It doesn't make any sense. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. If you have somehow made sense of the complete nonsense that is Major League Baseball's draft, please fill me in. Please enlighten me. Because I'll be the first to admit, I don't have a clue what's going on. If you have that info, or if you have any other questions or comments, as always, you can email me at vegasdavesdime@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening, and have a good one, everybody.